Hola.
Barcelona. I'm here to learn, everybody.
Sí. Desde Barcelona, el podcast Virtually Speaking con Pedro y John.
Face meltingly awesome.
Barcelona. I'm profoundly dumbfounded.
Sí.
Booyah, Grandma!
Viva!
This is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 95. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man? You ready for Barcelona?
Dude, my bags are packed. In fact, I need to be at the airport in like 45 minutes, so we better make this one quick.
Yeah. I hear you, man. So what I'm going to do, actually, John, since we are both getting ready to go to the airport, is I didn't want to leave a whole week without an episode, and we've had so many great conversations in the previous VMworld. And so what we're going to do is we're going to share a couple of the conversations we had a couple of weeks ago at VMworld US. This is the great part about VMworld. I mean, you go and you learn a bunch of sessions, you get to socialize and network, but you get to talk to a bunch of great people like partners, customers, and even some coworkers. And so we've got a few conversations that we want to share with you that I think you'll find interesting. The first one is from a gentleman by the name of Paudi Oriden. He works in VMware's Office of the CTO in Storage and Availability. And part of his job is focusing on Customer Zero. And I'll let him explain what that is. John, you know Paudi, right?
Yeah. You know, beyond me always mispronouncing his name, he is one of the smartest. He's incredibly detailed and thorough at just finding the craziest ways that people use the products from, I guess, his years of experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, I learned a lot about Customer Zero. I thought it was a great conversation. And so, we're going to leave you with a little bit of Customer Zero with Paudi Oriden. So take a listen.
John, joining us at VMworld 2018 is a good friend of ours from Okta, Mr. Paudi Oriden. Paudi, how you doing?
Hi, I'm not too bad. How are you?
That sounded so official. Come on, I know you better than that.
Yeah, well, I'm in front of a mic now, and I just, you know, I'm putting on my game face, yeah. Even though nobody can see me, apparently.
Yeah, it's a game face for radio.
Yeah, well, I do have a face for radio, so that's perfect.
But the voice is golden, man.
Yeah, that's how I lure everyone in.
He sounds so nice at first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, how do you think I got the job?
Well, we don't understand what he's saying, but it sounds smart.
Very nice. Yeah. So, Paudi, we want to talk to you about something that you've been working on for a while that I think is pretty exciting. It's called Customer Zero.
Yeah. So, basically, about a couple of years ago, I joined the SABU, our Storage and Availability Unit in VMware, and I started working with Cormac.
Yep.
So, as most people know, Cormac blogs quite extensively on storage topics, namely vSAN and other bits and pieces. So, I would be probably his shadowy other half.
Okay.
So what I try to do is look at the products that are shipped by SABU, vSAN, all these kind of things, Core Storage, and look at them from a customer perspective. And the reason why I think that kind of works for me is I've come from, let's say, a customer service background, a support background. So
okay.
I suppose my view of the world is I see the problems and I see danger constantly. So, I mean, driving to work is a nightmare with me. I'm very jumpy in the car.
That's got to be tough, though, because obviously Customer Zero, this is you have to find all the problems. That sounds depressing.
Well, I suppose I don't go out to find the problems. The problems find me. But but what I'm trying to say is I look at a product and I look at the user experiences, things what I want to look at is, I'm always of the mind is, I want this to be really simple and I want it to be really visual. And I work a lot currently, let's say, with the vSAN workflows.
Okay.
So the H5 client, to work a lot of the guys, the devs in our Sophia office, where they said, okay, validate this workflow and validate the views and displays. One of them we worked on was like health. So okay. For us, my background is you get an environment that's on fire, to say from a support perspective, and then you have to break up the problem into little units.
Yeah, if I have 40 alarms on, what's the actual root cause? Well, some of these are derivative of others.
So yeah, so what's the first alarm, and then you got to work it down. So it's how that's displayed to the user, and you say, okay, well, I have this problem. I know there is a problem, and how do I tell my boss the impact of the problem is thus?
Right.
And this is what I need to fix it. Because you have one ear on the phone back to your, let's say, your vendor, and you have two guys hovering behind you, who's your boss, and looking for what's the collateral impact of the issue. They know you want to address the issue as an admin, but they also want a quick answer. And that's why we're liking looking at those workflows, from those HCI-type workflows, and the vSAN Health particularly. We were a big proponent of that when I came on board. We started working with the vSAN Health guys.
Sure.
We were heavily involved at the beginning of that project, saying we need this alarm, you need that alarm, you need to understand the network, you need to understand the storage, you need to piece it all together in a coherent, I'd say, and in my mind, because I don't read that good, in a visual display. So sure. You say, okay, I can see at a glance how bad things are, and then I can drill into particular the most likely scenario that I can get out of the problem as quickly as possible.
And one of the challenges with UI workflows, I'll say, is historically, if a product has a lot of customers, which vSphere, vSAN, you know, there's quite a few out there, there's always an apprehension to change a workflow because of all the people who've been trained and documented on that. But it's been interesting to see as the HTML5 come out that it looks like there's been an opportunity to kind of reset expectations of where things should be to more logical rather than just kind of, you know, letting that inertia and cruft of, you know, legacy design decisions carry forward.
Well, I had a very interesting conversation with a customer today. We went through another UI design, interview, and he was saying, well, I kind of got used to it. And I said, well, why did you suddenly get used to it? And I said, were you too tired of looking at the old flex views? And he goes, I just learned to live with it. And I was a bit disappointed when he said that. And I said, well, look, this is what we're trying to do. And I said, we all knew the challenges of the Flex client, especially when we built in vSAN. And we said we decided to take a newer approach and make things simpler. I always joke with Cormac saying, you know, enabling vSAN is two clicks. Sure. It's not. Okay, two clicks, maybe, but yeah, all the work behind that is
you got to get VM kernel ports, and even the right networks. You need a VDS built.
And if you look at the U1 stuff now, where we give a lot of feedback on, let's say, cluster creation, we said, okay, I want to put together a bunch of hosts. They're fairly uniform. I've got my vSAN rating nodes. I just want to at least not have to go 20 places around the UI. And if you look at, like, some UI, when you look at the overall UI, you get a lot of information, but all you want is the pieces you need.
Well, yeah, there's you know, maybe five or six things on each coast you want to hit, but it's like, okay, I need to go, where was NTP buried again? Like, there are all these things that were kind of...
Are the problem, well, what you find out is you keep having to refine. If you go back and re-modify the cluster, change its state constantly, all you want to do is up and running and, you know, worry about it just the one time.
Exactly.
So we're trying to guide people along. Now, we started the first iteration with U1. It's okay, I think. I think it's a good start. I think it will build on that. People internally are getting the message. They're understanding you just want to simplify workflow. You just want to get what you need.
Yeah.
And then you would hope that the UI and the system take care of all the tweaks. For example, with U1, which is quite nice, is when you create your distributed vSwitches. Now I'm through the cluster workflow.
Yeah, the quick assist. Yeah.
It'll set the shares for your vSAN traffic under the covers.
That's beautiful.
So you don't even have to think about that. So there's little nuggets in there.
Was that your advice to do that? Was that your suggestion? Very nice.
And that's the thing, is there's these things that we have, you know, I hate the phrase best practices, but we have recommended practices that, you know, 95, 98% of people should use. And we should largely default to those or make them easy to consume.
And the nice thing with these views is they worked a lot with another team I worked with prior to coming to vSAN, was the integrated systems unit, the guys that write the VVDs.
Yeah.
So a lot of the information there is gleaned, saying, okay, how would they do it on the VVD? So you basically could wind up in a situation, especially from an infrastructure perspective, you'll get pretty much in line with what the VVD guys do, which is kind of nice. It kind of builds the story together, saying, like, this is generally how you put your cluster together and start shipping it into production.
Well, That's just a great thing, you know, in terms of hearing how we're coming together on, we've got these examples you should have, and we're making the machine easy to get to that state, which, you know, That way you can go worry about other problems.
All right, I want to change my mind then. I started this by saying that that sounds like a bad job in the sense that you have to find the problems and it sounded depressing. That actually sounds like the best job because you're actually having direct input into the next version of this. And someone who...
Design the solution.
Yeah,
you know, not just find the fires, but you know, let's design
making it better.
I think you find the fires along the way.
Yeah,
I think it's been a journey for me because I think the internal devs are beginning to trust us more now.
Yeah,
well, what we see and how our view of the world.
That's the way it's supposed to
be.
And
they're saying, yeah, okay, let's take it in, and then you can have these conversations saying, look, we can't get it into this release, but we'll build on it. We know what the message is. We know what we're getting from the customers,
from the
VMUGs, what we go and talking to customers individually. And that builds nicely. I think, look, we won't solve everything immediately, but I think we're beginning now to roll in one direction.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Awesome, Powdy. Thanks for joining us, man.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, so that's Powdy O'Riden from the office of the CTO. I'm glad we finally got him on the podcast. We've been wanting to chat with him for a while because super sharp guy. All right, so this next conversation we had was with a good friend of ours from Cohesity, Mr. Chris Colati. Now, if you've never heard of Cohesity, you need to check them out. So I think for a long time, their main story was that they were secondary storage. But they've definitely moved beyond that. Of course, they still focus on secondary storage, but they do a lot more than that. And so we had a chance to talk to Chris about that. Like, what's going on? What is the evolution of Cohesity? And we got to hear about their most recent announcement at VMworld, which is Helios. Their SaaS solution. So take a listen.
All right. Joining us on the podcast now he's no longer from VMworld. He's now from Cohesity, a different color green. Chris Colati. Chris, welcome back, man.
Thanks, guys. It's always great.
So what are you guys talking over at the Cohesity booth this week?
Oh, so the big release this week, a bunch of people are on, I think the VXpert announcement too, is Helios. So that we announced last week. It is a SaaS-based implementation that will essentially aggregate all of the deployments of Cohesity clusters into one place to do machine learning, global search, predictive analytics. And we're actually running that from a SaaS side, SaaS platform side. So it's actually pretty cool. I mean, we've got a lot of customers with a lot of implementations. I think a lot of people don't know we can deploy in so many different places. It's not just, you know, physical clusters. We've got a virtual edition, we've got a cloud edition. And the whole idea is to bring all that up. You know, I for lack of a better term, I relate it to the virtual center of, you know, Cohesity, but very similar, right? You need a single management plane to do. The biggest thing too is a global search piece and being able to, for compliance reasons, you know, search for patterns, but not go to each cluster, right? Say, does this pattern exist everywhere? And then report on that and say, oh yeah, we've got, like, you know, patterns that look like social security numbers in too many places.
Or maybe, I guess, the Europeans have suddenly decided they like privacy and, you know.
Yeah,
like,
man. We can talk about that Slack channel for a while.
Yeah. And just be like,
Don't diverge on that.
But the idea, though, if you've got this global, you know, global ability search, but you can also say, okay, I've got boxes in these compliance regions. You can push down this policy.
Completely differently. Engine. Yeah, there's a policy engine behind it, and every customer that's sort of using the platform will, if they opt in, obviously, will use that to do comparisons as to where, you know, where you're not data specific, but
benchmarking against
other people running the platform.
That reminds me of the William Lamb and Alan Arnuth project back in the day, where you basically would run an appliance and it would give you some insights, and then it would compare you and you had to opt in to do it, but it'd be like, oh, out of companies of this size, I am at, you know, I'm in the median for density of VMs or things.
Yeah, you're running this much, you have this much data out there, you're indexing this much. Yeah. You know, and I think people are interested in that. I don't know if it helps them run the business differently, but.
I mean, it would be good to know if, you know, be like, you know, they run it on my storage at my house and be like, right, you have a lot of cat photos, like way more than 98%
mine are all dog photos.
So yeah, just, you know,
no, but I think it's also for scalability too. I mean, one of the things we talk about in the booth is we don't have to forklift upgrade, right? So if you need more capacity, you can add more nodes, you can add more blocks, but having the predictive analytics of you're growing at this rate, right?
Sure.
You're ingesting this much data and you've done it this fast over this amount of time. I think that actually helps people understand when they got to grow or add new deployments too. So it's all about predictive.
Unstructured data is something Pete's probably heard me go on enough rants about over the years.
Why don't you have Mohit on here talking about that? I mean, he loves talking about unstructured data.
Yes, he does.
Well, but, you know, unstructured data, it's those files. It's things that are not databases, not LUNs, they're not block. This is kind of this.
It's everything. It's like 80% of all data, right?
And if you,
I don't know if that's real. I'm just.
I mean, I was recently cleaning up my laptop because, like, my actual local drive was full, and I was like,
too many cat photos.
I don't delete anything. You know, it's like,
I don't either. I actually, I look back at my Google Drive my personal one, and it goes back to like whenever they started the service. Like, there's stuff. Why do I have this file? Well, but and I couldn't bring myself to delete it, though. It's just not.
But what's scary is, so as a former storage admin, you know, or a recovering storage admin, as I'll call myself, is we would have a lot of cases back in the day. You know, this is back when data was small and reasonably manageable.
Right.
You know, put it on a Windows host, a little file server or something.
Yeah.
But people would be like, hey, where'd all my storage go? Or what's going on with this? Why are my backups taking forever? And, you know, you had two avenues. You know, you had the traditional, well, we should just throw more storage at this problem. And eventually sometimes someone would say, hey, let's bring in the consultant or we'll have the kid go look into it. And I'd turn on Windows Server File Resource Manager, which is a built-in tool, but it, you know, obviously no global scale or anything, but you could run it on an individual server and it would give you a little report. And there were some other guys who would do some reporting stuff. It was all kind of pricey, but, and you, it was shocking what you would find. And I don't mean like, oh, shocking, you know, adult content, which you, I mean, obviously.
Although there was
always
a little bit.
You always
music. It was always MP4s when I was an admin. You
but just found adult cat photos.
Tons of music files.
But it's, I mean, there's, when you start digging into the junk drawer, which is what a lot of people treat their unstructured data target, and not the gold mine that it should be of, you know, useful things. I mean, I found a company that the owner, right, we tied it back, like this guy just out of the Marine Corps, was every Disney movie ever released.
Oh, Lord.
Where is that guy? I want to get that on my Plex.
This was like 80 terabytes or something. I was like, what is this doing on Enterprise, Tier 1, NAS, and all that?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is not cheap storage at the time. This is back when storage cost something.
Sitting on his domain controller.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, but we would do these reports and we do one, you know, and. And I know you guys have all this reporting capability. More importantly, you can bring this type of power globally, which is cool. But being able to do breakdown by user, you always have this one outlier. And it's like, this one user figured out how to use Windows Backup and do a full VHD every day to the file, to his profile or something. Like, you will just find some – I encourage our listeners to go out there and, you know, whatever your tooling is, you know, hopefully you've got nice Helios here. But – go do some discovery and you'll be like, wow, if we actually got some real reporting, you're going to find some wacky stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I thought Cohesity was a backup company, but it seems like you guys are spreading out your portfolio a little bit.
I love that because we did, if anybody watched Cloud Field Day 4 a couple weeks ago, one of the biggest things the delegates were tweeting was we walked through the door and I think it was Ken Nalbone actually tweeted this. He said, yeah,
he just walked by actually.
Did he? He said it says right on the wall, you know, hyperconverged secondary storage, and there is so much more. They need to I think he tweeted they need to rethink that line.
Yeah.
And it's true, right? I mean, when I came over here, I thought it starts with data protection, right? And data protection's always been the first story, but what I tell people in the booth is I said that's one way to ingest the data, but then we have these other capabilities with both NFS, SMB, S3. I mean, we can ingest data that way too. And then once it's on the platform, then you can start to manipulate it from a replication perspective, cloud archiving, like all these other things that we can do, which are not just data protection in the sense of backing up a VM. I mean, you can lump it into that data protection bucket because we all do that. I mean, I think I always make the joke, I have 5 copies of stuff at any given point in different clouds because night that I lost my wife's like photos and stuff off of a NAS box and she went... You know,
and we moved. I moved from Dropbox to OneDrive, and I never bothered to delete everything. And
but isn't it in the cloud?
It is now. Yeah, and then it's in 4 different ones. But it is true. You know, I think that's what people are being surprised at with what Cohesity and Mohit and the vision is it's not just about backup, right? I mean, that's one. I was talking to a service provider today, a friend of mine, as I was running over here, and he's trying to build solutions for his customers around what they can do. And in his eyes, he said, well, show me data protection. I said, okay, but that's just one thing. But what if you did all this? And then all of a sudden, what's great for me about these shows is you get into these use case conversations, like, what about this or what about that? And then you start grabbing a whiteboard and going, well, yeah, we could do this and go over here. And I haven't tested that yet, but it'll work. You know, I mean, let's go in the lab and do it. Yeah, well, everything works theoretically.
And what is great is, you know, you may have started with that data protection model, but, you know, unstructured management, not only on the ingest path, but also on where that flows out the back of the tiering to cloud and moving that.
Absolutely.
Or replicating between sites. I love how you're trying to provide as much value and insight. And I almost had this cynical attitude back in the day that I thought all the NAS vendors, they all had – the reporting tools were often pretty weak and they often were outrageously expensive add-ons. And I'm like, they don't want me to know what my storage is because then I would buy a tenth as much once I actually clean up all the cat photos.
Yeah, but we actually – and the workbench part is something we're starting to show more. So a lot of people – hadn't been using it on the individual platforms, but where the power comes in is when they're all rolled up into Helios and it's all global. Now running, so there's actually, if you come over to the booth, dude, we show the pattern finder, right? You can actually go do the pattern searches and stuff, but right now you'd have to do it on every individual cluster, where being able to do that globally and instantly is just, I think back when, well, I'm going to date myself, but
when back I came when to my, I had a zip drive.
Oh, man. Yeah, and that was the greatest thing since sliced bread. We should do one of these podcasts with like reminiscence, like, yeah. You know,
we'll get Howard Marks on. I'll be like, well, yeah. And I'll be like, I remember my jazz drive. He's like, you young whippersnappers.
Yeah, but I don't feel like I'm that far off. The first time I ever installed Office, my dad brought it home on like a stack, literally a stack of 3.5-inch drives.
Oh, of course.
And it took days to install it, right? Now we're totally off topic, but what are we doing? I have no idea.
Squirrel.
Yeah, something shiny. It's really cool technology. I love working for companies that have something different to tell. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, Rawlinson tried to get me over to Cohesity was it's just, I'm a storyteller, right? Yeah. So I love teaching people. I love presenting, but because I like to see the light bulb go off in people's eyes. And this is a way to do, this technology is a way to do that. And I think people are starting to figure it out. That's just not, it's not a one trick pony.
Well, and also it kind of ties into, you know, a larger theme, I guess, of VMworld, if we're going to try to invent themes here, of meeting the customer where they are, being able to, you know, deploy it multiple, you know, software, hardware, cloud, be able to, you know, solve multiple challenges in that and meet them within, you know, the framework that they're at today. So.
And just all I can say, there's a lot of stuff I can't really say, but over the next few months, there's going to be some interesting announcements and some stuff coming that I think is really going to be cool.
Well, you guys got $250 million for your last funding round. I assume there's either a lot more Snoop Dogg parties or some cool R&D. It's got to go one way or the other, buddy.
I don't know where it is.
Foo Fighters.
AC/DC. Yeah, but wait. Malcolm can't sing anymore. So,
All right, Chris. Thanks for joining us, man. Say hi to Rolo.
I will. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah. Always good to talk to Chris, learn about Cohesity, but then also go off topic and have fun talking about the old days. So good conversation. Great seeing Chris. All right, so this last conversation we want to share with you is the first of many conversations we're having with people having to do with what we're calling fire, flood, and blood.
Fire, flood, blood.
Yeah. So the idea behind this conversation is we like to grab quick conversations with people about maybe some of their worst mistakes in a data center, you know, whether it's a disaster recovery story that they have, or maybe a mistake that was made where they were able to save the day. Everybody's got a good story, you know, the one story they tell at the bar about their friends, you're not going to believe what happened to me in this one data center. And so we thought we'd kick this off with a good friend of ours, Mr. Rickatron, Rick Vanover over at Veeam. And so take a listen to Rick on the very first edition of our Fire, Flood, and Blood.
About 10, 15 years ago, I was a engineer in the supply chain industry. And I worked for one of the large German conglomerate multinational engineering firms, which, you know, probably wouldn't be too hard to guess. But anyways, we had a customer and I installed these systems that did material handling, conveyor systems, package movement and all that. We had a customer. They sold office materials like printer ink. And believe it or not, somebody broke in to the warehouse to steal the printer ink. Because, if you know, the price...
It's worth more than unicorn tears.
Yeah. And if you're thinking about like a warehouse worth, that's some inventory.
Yeah.
Right? So the situation was that they went in and they went into the computer room. And, you know, the solution that I was in from the material handling standpoint controlled like conveyor systems.
Okay.
But it was a big rack of computers. It looked important. And... the thugs,
lots of blinking lights.
That's right. The thugs went in with a baseball bat, just beat the snot out of it. But they're thinking it was a security system.
Oh my goodness!
So it was the conveyor control system, and they got the loot. You know, they got like a bunch of whatchamacallit, printer ink, right? And literally, it totally rendered the conveyor system inoperable.
Of course, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And a hammer will do that.
Yeah. And literally, there was a support ticket coming in asking if that was covered under warranty. But we had a backup, so we saved the day. So nice. That, you know, like whenever I would deploy those systems, you know, I had to think about the availability spot right from the beginning, because you know why? Above all, I did not want to get called from that customer a year later because they're mad about something not working, right? So that actually kind of put me on a path to an extent of where I am now.
Yeah, so that's Rick Vanover sharing his fire, flood, and blood story, if you will. We're hoping to capture a lot of those. And so if you're listening to this and you're a fan of the show, reach out to us at VertSpeaking on Twitter, and maybe we can capture your fire, flood, and blood story. So yeah, those were just a couple of the interviews that we wanted to share with you this week as we get ready to head to Barcelona. That's one of the best things about going to VMworld. I know we talked about, you know, there's so many great things to do there, to learn and connect and to really get inspired. But definitely a great thing is to connect and to have good conversations and network with your peers in this V community. John, you agree?
Yeah, it's fun because a lot of these people I engage in like snarky responses back and forth with on Twitter. But when you meet us all in real life, I promise we're much nicer for those of you who follow us on Twitter or hopefully don't. So.
Nice. Yeah. All right. So those are the interviews we have for you this week. If you are going to VMworld, we'd love to chat with you. We've got some V Speaking Podcast swag to share with you. We also have this awesome pair of Beats by V. We're calling them Beats by Dre headphones. And we're giving those away to one listener. So just keep listening and swing by the HCI zone in the Solutions Exchange. That's where John and I are going to be podcasting all week. We'd love to talk to you. We'd love to give you some swag. And also maybe you'll win a pair of these awesome headphones. All right, John. So I think that's going to do it, man. I'm gonna finish packing and head to the airport. How about yourself? You ready to go?
Yeah, no, I've been avoiding salt for the past week, so I am ready for the mountain of tapas and jamon that is coming our way.
Sí, de acuerdo. All right, well, that Spanish music tells me it's time to go to Barcelona. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. And listen to all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. We'll see you next week. But until then, bye for now.
La niña de Barcelona, oh, 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 son bonitas y bailan bien, oh, 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 simplemente una mirada, oh, 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 te rompen el corazón. Es un pueblo de gitano, oh, 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 donde nació la rumba.
Enough of this jibber jabber.